Welcome to Community Conversations, a monthly program on KUMD dedicated to topics of interest in our community and fostering our community connections. I'm your host, Lisa Johnson, and this evening we're talking about veterans and how they make or don't make the transition to civilian life. Veterans Day honors the veterans among us, but many veterans aren't comfortable with the stereotypes they face when they get home. What if they don't want to be seen as either heroes or damaged somehow? Is there anything in between? Let's meet our guests.
I'm Mike Waldron. I served in the Marine Corps Infantry for 4 years. About 5 years after combat, I fell into some pretty severe symptoms of PTSD. Since then, I've learned how to pull out of those, and now I am the executive director of 23rd Veteran, creating a long-term transition for our veterans with PTSD.
I'm Daniel Fanning. I am also an Army combat veteran of the Iraq War. I'm currently working at UW-Superior, and through my work at the university as well as through the city, I've been involved with the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon campaign, and I'm also working to help integration for veterans coming back home.
Hi, I'm Eric Chandler. I'm a 24-year veteran of the Air Force, both in active duty and the Minnesota Air National Guard, deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan, and now I do some freelance writing, some of it veterans-related topics.
It wasn't that long ago in the news that we're hearing a lot about PTSD. We're hearing a lot about suicide rates with veterans. We're hearing a lot about problems that veterans were having with the VA. The way these things go, the news breaks and there's a lot of conversation about it, and then something else breaks and the stories sort of lapse away into obscurity. Where are things right now on some of these issues?
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's a little bit of a – I see it from two different angles, right? So first of all, I think some of those issues are still going on, and as you alluded to, because some other shiny object comes up, sometimes the spotlight gets taken off of those issues. So I know many of us are trying to keep those issues in the spotlight, but at the same time, sometimes because they're not explained the right way or maybe because people can't get into details with them, that also sometimes perpetuates some stereotypes that aren't always true. And that's where I've heard a lot of students on our campus or other students say, you know, I get the sense that because I came back and I served in the military and I'm proud of that service, but people think that I automatically have something wrong with me for whatever reason. And I think we want to be really careful and delicate about that because, first of all, even those who are struggling, they want support, but they don't also want to be labeled as having something wrong with them because it's not a weakness. It's a system that, you know, we need to, all of us, every member of society, whether it be the VA or anybody else, needs to step up to try to help support our returning soldiers or our service members. That said, there's a lot of service members that come back as well that are just trying to reintegrate back into society and maybe don't have mental health issues, and they're actually far more interested in just looking for a job or trying to get back into education. So it really runs the gamut to making sure that it's not just always about mental health, although that's an extremely important issue that we should absolutely focus on. It's not just that the VA is failing veterans because for the most part, we've made some great progress there. There's more work we can and must do, but we've seen some good progress there. So I don't think at least for me, I don't want to see veterans be victimized. But at the same time, I think that there's more we can do to be supportive of all of our veterans. And that's really literally across the gamut. That's universities stepping up. That's cities. That's communities. That's counties. That's radio stations. It's everyone stepping up. It's business owners. If you have an opportunity to hire a veteran, for example, why wouldn't you? I mean, those are some of the most loyalist, hardest working, you know, well-trained individuals that you're going to find. And you're seeing more and more strategies to get more veterans hired. And that's a perfect example of what we all can be doing as a society. So to answer your question, there are still definitely some lingering issues that have to be addressed. But at the same time, there's a lot of really wonderful people who have really good experience who want to continue to contribute to society, who are looking to either get back to work or to find a way to get into their school system. And that's where I think many of us can step up and be supportive.
I've spent a lot of time talking either on Northland Morning or different Community Conversations episodes about the idea of mental illness and trying to reduce the stigma. And as a person with a mental illness, it's something that's very important, I think, to Right. talk about. When we talk about veterans and adjustment issues, whether we're talking about an extreme or sometimes, you know, a potentially extreme and life-threatening mental illness like PTSD, or just some of the issues that veterans talk about trying to reintegrate into families and the new family dynamic, some of the issues that they have reintegrating back into their families and reintegrating Right. into their lives. Can that be solved by increasing our awareness about mental health? Or is this something that is a little bit different? It needs to kind of be addressed specifically in the context of veterans.
There's a story that I like to tell. It's a short analogy on what happens when we join the military. If you picture us like when we grow up for 18 or more years in our community, we're kind of a piece of a puzzle. And we're shaped to fit in that community and in our family and our work. And when we join the military, that puzzle piece is ripped out and is put in a new puzzle. And from there, it's reshaped and reformed further. If you deploy to combat, it's reshaped even more. And then when we try to come back to our civilian life, we're taking that puzzle piece out of the military puzzle, trying to fit it back into where it originally was. And the puzzle's changed. The piece has changed. So it no longer fits. Not only does it not fit anymore, that community puzzle has no longer has a gap. It's filled in. Our family's learned how to get by without us, our work, our coworkers. So there's kind of a two-part approach that 23rd Veteran uses with this. One is reopening that community puzzle. So it's training the community, the business owners, like in the universities, like Dan mentioned, on how to create that more friendly environment for the veterans so they understand a little more about what happens in combat to our brains and how to not set off the common triggers that we experience. And then the second part is retraining the veteran's brain to live more successfully in a civilian world so they understand the changes that have happened in their brain when they're in combat, and if they want to change those back to a civilian mindset, they can. I think you hit the nail on the head on what creates that negative stigma, is we don't know that our brains are supposed to adapt for these traumatic situations so that we can be successful in them. It's good to have your brain and body be prepared for a combat situation or a life and death situation over and over when you're going to be facing those in combat. And then we come back to the civilian world and our bodies are still trying to prepare over and over for these life and death situations, but that life and death situation is no longer in front of us, so we don't understand it. And then in the early 1980s, we decided to label that a disorder, call it post-traumatic stress disorder, when it was never called a disorder before that. So now it looks like we need help for a mental health problem when all it is retraining our brain to live more successfully in a civilian world. You're not going to be facing those life and deaths over and over again.
Was it any better, though, when we called it shell shock?
Well, I remember when I was younger, my extended family's in Maine, and we would drive up this same road to go visit my grandparents, and there was a World War II veterans home along that stretch of road, and you'd often see, you know, veterans walking down the street near that home, and my parents just said, yeah, that guy's got shell shock, and it was kind of like isn't that too bad? And I was just a kid, but now that I'm a veteran, been to combat a few times myself, I have a different perspective. It's exactly what Mike is talking about. You've experienced things that, you know, my experience as an Air Force veteran in combat is different than Mike's, different than Dan's. You know, everybody has a different experience and has different adaptations in their head, and you know it's a case by case way that people need to be reintegrated, and, you know, so it's a subtle thing for each person. Some people have no problems whatsoever. Some people have a lot of difficulty, and there's a whole spectrum there. And unfortunately, I think what happens is that people, like when I was a kid, my dad said, oh, those guys are shell-shocked. So it kind of fits into the same narrative that's out there in the mass media and in the public, that you're either a hero or damaged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's no nuance there. It's just you're either, you know, someone to be frightened of or someone to, you know, buy their supper for them at Applebee's or whatever,
right.
You know, so there's no in between. There's no subtlety. There's no, you know, nuance. So that's just one view of that.
No one likes to be thought of as damaged. And yet, if you do say that PTSD, for example, is a disorder, then there can be help. And then there can be efforts to reach out and help people live more successfully and live differently. And so from that standpoint, the labeling of PTSD as a disorder is, it seems to me that it could be the first step along the line to getting help and getting better.
I think there could be a benefit to that, but the flip side would be that my personal opinion is what I've seen happen is then it almost becomes that easy way out. Well, if somebody has an issue or if there's, you know, if there's something that isn't quite right, then they must have PTSD. And it kind of goes back to a great point that was made earlier is it literally is so situational that you can't, everything just doesn't neatly fit underneath the same umbrella. A perfect example is many of us who served in combat in Iraq, our heads were on a swivel every time we were driving down the road. So when we came back home, it takes a while to kind of just get used to driving again and not having to worry about an IED detonating underneath your car. And that's how we stayed alive. That's literally what kept us alive over there. So it takes a while to kind of just get used to not having to worry about every time you get in the car. Or another example that I know I experienced, and I hear a lot of students in college do now, you know, we were going constantly 24/7 and sometimes weeks and days on end. And then it gets difficult for us to sit in the classroom for two-hour classes because our attention span, a lot of us already have a short attention spans, but then we just get used to going full throttle all the time. And it takes a while to kind of get used to slowing down. So I don't think people who are having those just kind of slower adjustment issues, I would hate to label that PTSD because it's typically not what it is. But what I see happening sometimes is if people are struggling a little bit, then they automatically get labeled. So while there might be a benefit to having a label out there so that it can be addressed in a mental health way, it's also important to kind of differentiate that just because you're having some adjustment issues or it's just going to take time, that doesn't necessarily mean you have a mental health issue. Not that there's anything wrong with having a mental health issue, but it's not that easy.
You're listening to Community Conversations on KUMD. We're talking about veterans making the transition and finding the tribe this evening. Our guests in the studio are Marine Combat Veteran of Operation Iraqi Freedom, Mike Waldron, now Executive Director of 23rd Veteran. Daniel Fanning, Army Combat Veteran of the Iraq War and involved with the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon campaign and other community efforts to help integrate veterans coming home. And Eric Chandler, a 24-year veteran of the Air Force, active duty in Iraq and Afghanistan, and a member of the Minnesota Air National Guard, and a freelance writer who writes occasionally on veterans and veteran-related topics. We do not have the right words in many instances, especially when it does come to mental health issues. We don't have the right words. Until you give people new words that they can use to communicate what they want to communicate, we're going to struggle.
Well, one of the new words that actually was interesting to me is a book by Sebastian Younger. He was involved in the book The Perfect Storm and did movies like Restrepo, documentaries about Afghanistan. He wrote a book recently called Tribe, and he talks about a new way of looking at this, which is pertinent to what Dan just said. He talks about there are people who need genuine help that truly do have post-traumatic stress, and they need help, and it's genuine, and, mm-hmm. and it's serious. But there's also a large spectrum of people, and I wish I could remember the term off the top of my head, but he called it something that's more, it's not post-traumatic stress, but it's basically a chronic readjustment problem that stems from service, maybe in combat, maybe not, but just reintegrating into society whether or not you saw combat. Because there are people who have post-traumatic stress who did not see combat. Mm-hmm. There are people who have this readjustment need that didn't see combat, and they need help too. It might not rise to the level of clinical help, but they need help to readjust. And that's where I think some of this nuance needs to come into these discussions, and more language and more correct terms for things, so that people don't just label it like a cardboard cutout or like a cartoon. You know, mm-hmm. So and I think that's the first time I've seen someone of prominence use a term that better labels that middle ground was Sebastian Younger in that book Tribe that just came out this year.
One of the things that I think I don't remember why I suppose setting this up with you guys that I was thinking of is that my dad never took advantage of any of the services that were offered him as a veteran. He never went to the VA. He never took advantage of any of he had already I don't think he took advantage of the VA for schooling. And I think I can't ask him now, but I think it was because I don't want to say he was ashamed of the fact that he didn't go to combat, that he went as far as Chicago and pushed paper during the Second World War. But I think he felt as though there were guys that really needed or deserved these things, and that if he could pay for these things himself, he didn't feel, entitled, perhaps, to these things? Or maybe, again, he just thought, well, I can, you know, I can take care of these. I can pay for these things myself. I'm going to leave these options for other people. Do you think that there's – talk a little bit about coming back as a wounded veteran if you've lost a limb, if you're in a VA hospital with the permanent disability, some sort of a physical disability that people can see, and how you feel as a veteran with an invisible illness.
Doesn't matter how much combat we experienced or didn't experience. It doesn't matter how drastic our injuries are. We feel like somebody out there deserves it more. Somebody did more than us. So we don't want to take advantage of these services that donors are giving or organizations are offering, because we don't want to take that from somebody else that we served with. We feel like that's us taking from one of our brothers or sisters. And the result of that is it's really difficult for a lot of like the nonprofit organizations or schools to find veterans to take advantage of their programs. I got out of the Marine Corps in 2004, and I didn't identify as a veteran until 2009. I didn't take advantage of any programs. I didn't apply for anything that veterans would apply for that reason. The one that I did take advantage of, there was 28 of us in the program, all veterans. All of us had to have a legitimate disability through the VA to take part in this program. And when I was there, there was maybe three of the 28 that had a visible disability. So that's the first time that I realized that maybe I wasn't alone in having PTSD. And that was a big realization for me. And then that made it more comfortable for me on top of realizing there's so many of us with this disability that should be taking advantage of some of these programs. Furthermore, I realized by taking advantage of these programs, I'm doing a favor or a service for the people that are giving it. There's so many people volunteering their time and giving their money for the veterans. If we take advantage of that, it makes them feel valuable, like they're giving back to the military. And that was a really important realization for me. I think if more of us knew by accepting these services, we are actually providing a service for the people that are donating, then we'd be more open to doing so.
The simple act of someone saying thank you for your service, it can be seen in veteran circles as a knee-jerk response to learning that you served. And earlier on, I found it kind of, frankly, irritating. You know, I felt it was like a bumper sticker response to people's service to the country. But now, Mike makes a really good point. I mean, it is their attempt to reach out, and even if it might be just in passing, I think that's a really great point. I mean, it actually allows them to connect, even if it's on a very superficial level, and I've learned to grow up a little and just say you're welcome instead of getting all crabby like I tend to do. But I think that's a really important point.
And I'd agree. And the point that the vast majority of people genuinely care and want to be supportive and don't always know how. And I totally understand that. And I think that's, as Mike said really well, it's on us to help explain that. And I think that if sometimes we're not good at that either, and sometimes it's a matter of pride, and sometimes it's a matter of we don't even know what we need until we need it type thing. I think we've all been in those shoes where, you know, it's almost like I don't even want, you know, the sympathy. I don't want the handout or whatever. But I think it's important for all of us to realize that that's people trying. And even my own family members, like, you know, we love you. We support you. We want to help you. But we don't know what to do. So it's just a matter of even just inheriting that, as simple as that might sound, that probably means more to me than anything that anybody could do for me, because it's just like, okay, I get it. And I need to grow up, or I need to put the ego down and just realize that maybe I don't need anything, but just knowing that, you know, you care, sometimes that's the greatest gift.
You're listening to Community Conversations on KUMD. We're talking about veterans making the transition and finding the tribe this evening. Our guests in the studio are Marine Combat Veteran of Operation Iraqi Freedom, Mike Waldron, now Executive Director of 23rd Veteran, Daniel Fanning, Army combat veteran of the Iraq War and involved with the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon campaign and other community efforts to help integrate veterans coming home. and Eric Chandler, a 24-year veteran of the Air Force, active duty in Iraq and Afghanistan, and a member of the Minnesota Air National Guard, and a freelance writer who writes occasionally on veterans and veteran-related topics.
Is the military culture still a culture that almost punishes people for admitting to any kind of an adjustment disorder or to PTSD, so that people that are serving actively or veterans feel that they are compelled to keep up the facade, that everything is fine, or that somehow they'll be removed from service or embarrassed or stigmatized even by the military before anybody else has a chance to do it?
Yeah, absolutely. It is part of the culture that it's frowned upon to have any issues with not only mental health, but physical health. From where I came from, if you had the flu and incredibly sick, you're ridiculed for going to get that checked out. You're supposed to suck it up, and you're supposed to do your physical fitness anyway, and you're supposed to go out to the training anyway. If you have a broken ankle, you're still going to the 30-day field operation. And that's not different with the mental health. You mentioned something earlier about the word help, and that really brought to light the difference between the way civilians communicate and the way the military communicates. So the word help in the civilian world is different than the word help in the military world. In the military world, that's a very negative thing. That means you're weak. That means you can't hack it. That means you shouldn't have your job grade. That means you shouldn't be leading other people because you need help yourself. Where in the civilian world, it's not looked that way at all. To be vulnerable in the civilian world is to show your strength. Not the case in the military. So if we talked earlier a little bit about using different words, and I think that would be very effective, because the word help, I don't think it's going to be a very long time before we could change that culture to mean something positive in the military, where maybe using the words changing rather than help, this is something that's about you now, and we can change that if you choose to, instead of saying this is something about you and you need help.
And yet, by the same token, when service people come home, and in particular, if they have physical injuries that people can see, they're heroes. Somewhere along the line, they tip from weak in the military to heroes in civilian society. Where's that fulcrum?
Stanley McChrystal, he was the well-known special operator who was in charge of troops in Afghanistan for a while. He's been out there publicly trying to get people to admit that it's okay to seek help. Again, maybe that's not the right word, but to try to get, the opportunity to change the way their brain is wired to reintegrate to society. But, Mike's point's valid. I mean, I led a group of fighter pilots in combat and as the squadron commander, and you're always looking for who is showing weakness and determining how much extra training they need to make sure that they're competent and can help their wingmen if they get in a fight. So, I mean, yes, it's almost at cross purposes. The military you don't work at a bank. It's serious business. And you need to identify who's not cutting it so that you can help them train them to be better at their jobs. So on the one hand, you're looking for training so that they can be lethal. And at the same time, they're human beings. They're people that you probably love and are your friends. And particularly when I was in the Air National Guard, the people that I live with, my kids play soccer with their kids. They go to school. My kids go to school with their kids. I know these guys. I mean, I love them. So on the one hand, I want to make sure that they can do their job when it's a dark and stormy night, and then at the same time, when they're home, I want to make sure that they're healthy human beings in their community. So there's a lot of challenges there to try to create a culture that's more open to helping guys that are having trouble between their ears.
You mentioned that you've been doing a lot of writing about this topic, and that this kind of education or putting some new ideas out there is really important to you. Nobody obviously wants to be seen as damaged, but for many people, being tarred with the brush of being a hero would not necessarily be a bad thing. Why is this so important to you, Eric?
it's important to me because this gap we talked about, this civil-military gap, I mean, I raised my hand to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. I believe that our country is still a pretty darn good place. Mm-hmm. And the way we operate as a society, I believe in it. So, and I, you know, I'm retired now. I'm not in the service anymore. I fly people around in 737s. And I, you know, but I still believe that I care about the way our society operates. And that's what drives me to do. I mean, only about maybe 10%, 20% of the writing that I do is stories about military stuff. But when I do that, the reason I'm doing it, the underpinning of it, is that I'm trying to, I believe that this widening gap between civilians understanding their military people, I think it's a threat to the, our way of life. Because what could, I mean, if you look at the statistics of how many people serve in the Congress that have served in the military, that number continues to decline year after year after year. Over 70% of the people in 1971 in Congress and in the Senate had served in uniform. Mm-hmm. And now that number is less than 20%. And what I worry about is that as the level of understanding between our civilian leadership, because that is how our country is designed, is that the civilians are in charge of the military. And that is appropriate, in my opinion. But as more and more of our elected leadership has less and less understanding of what it means to serve, I think it means they're more and more likely to make decisions involving the military that might not be the best decisions. And I view it as a threat. You know, I don't. If the people that are sending guys to bleed don't have any understanding of what it's like to be in that role, I think that's a problem. I think it makes their decisions too easy. I think their decisions should be really difficult to make. And that's what drives what little effect my little stories have, is to try to mend that, to create more understanding.
Any of us who are involved with veterans issues do it because it's personal to us, and I think that's a good thing. I mean, I'll only speak for myself. The men and women that I serve with are among the most patriotic, even though sometimes you disagree on politics or we have our personal disagreements. Any of us probably would raise our hand again if we felt it was necessary, and I think that says a lot about people who serve. So I think we're all biased in that sense, and I don't apologize for that. I think that's a good thing. That said, to me, it almost seems like it's a part of a bigger societal question that's happening right now, and the military is almost kind of stuck in the middle of that. And you raised football, and by no means am I comparing a football player to a service member, because there is no comparison. But you see the same kind of conversation right now happening with concussions. So if you go out of the game, does that mean you're weak? And if you're weak, you know, so it's part of this larger conversation where, do you have to be severely wounded to be a hero? Of course not, right? But those who are a hero, of course they are. But so is everyone who's raised their hand to serve. So I think it plays into this bigger question, and the military is kind of stuck in that middle right now. As a society, we're trying to figure out what's appropriate, what should we accept, what shouldn't we accept. I'll tell you that my experience was a little bit different in the military. You can see, in my opinion, it probably has a lot to do with kind of post 9/11. A lot of us served after 9/11 who may not have served otherwise. If it wasn't for 9/11, I probably wouldn't have enlisted. So you saw a different kind of a person in the military, for better or for worse. And because of that, I think you've seen some changes, some of which are good, some of which might not be. I don't know. I guess that's for other people to decide. But I think that while I largely agree that it still is a culture that frowns upon weakness, and that might not always be a bad thing, I do feel that there are some strides being taken to try to be better at that. That's where you're seeing some more conversations, whether it be the military, whether it be through the VA, or whether that just be through society. We are trying to change that a little bit, and I think that's a good thing. I'm not saying we're there, we're not, but we're making strides, and I actually think that's a really, really good thing. And the more that we talk about this, and I certainly appreciate being on this program to talk about this, I think the more we all talk about that, the more it makes sense to people that, you know, we're really all just humans. I don't mean that in a cheesy way, but, you know, this could be any of our sons or daughters or brothers or sisters, because that's what the military is, and that's the beauty of it.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. We are certainly making strides and changes, and we're heading in a good direction. Kind of on the subject of football analogies and heroes, there's one that I like, and you brought up earlier that where is that tipping point of being a hero and being weak? What came to mind was, as at least in my unit, and I think most of us that serve, we don't look at ourselves as heroes. We're doing our job. And when we're in the heat of battle, the biggest reason most of us are there and want to do our job well is to protect those on our right and our left mm-hmm. of us. So we're really not thinking about the Constitution, thinking about the United States, the people back home. It's not about protecting your country. It's about making sure more of your friends live. And if some of us, I'd say myself first, like if I would have lost a limb, I wouldn't have thought any different of myself than if I didn't lose a limb. I don't become a hero because I was shot or because I was blown up. And I feel the same about my buddies. Nothing has changed about them other than they don't weigh as much as they used to. So when we look at ourselves and look at each other, it's kind of like being on a football team. The quarterback is part of the team, or the defensive end, they're part of a team. They don't look at the other team players as heroes. Or in the civilian world, or their fan base, they're looking at the team as heroes. So it doesn't really matter how much Adrian Peterson can run for yardage in a game. He doesn't become a hero to his own teammates. He's still part of that team.
Community Conversations is a monthly program here on KUMD dedicated to topics of interest in our community and fostering our community connections. I'm your host, Lisa Johnson. Thanks to our guests, Marine combat veteran of Operation Iraqi Freedom, Mike Waldron, now executive director of 23rd Veteran, Daniel Fanning, Army combat veteran of the Iraq War and involved with the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon campaign and other community efforts to help integrate veterans coming home. And Eric Chandler, a 24-year veteran of the Air Force, active duty in Iraq and Afghanistan, and a member of the Minnesota Air National Guard. Also, Eric is a freelance writer who writes occasionally on veterans and veteran-related topics. Community Conversations is produced by Lisa Johnson and funded by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.